On Tuesday, Kentuckians go to the polls for this year's primary election. We'll be choosing candidates who will appear on the November ballot for governor and lieutenant governor, attorney general, state treasurer, and commissioner of agriculture. A record number of Kentuckians is registered to vote ahead of this election season, although voter turnout for this year's primary is expected to be at about 10% or lower. On this week's Eastern Standard, we will discuss the candidates, what this election means for Kentuckians, as well as the controversies surrounding some of the candidates. We're interested in hearing from you with your questions, comments, or stories. Write to us by email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com, post on the WEKU Facebook page, or send a tweet at WEKUEST. In just a little while, we'll open the phones as well. It's time for Eastern Standard, right after the latest news from NPR. From the studios of WEKU on the campus of Eastern Kentucky University, this is Eastern Standard. Hello, I'm John Hingsbergen. Voter registration is reportedly at its highest here in the Commonwealth, but do Kentuckians actually care about this year's elections, or at least next week's primary? What do Kentuckians need to know during this election season, and especially prior to Tuesday's primary? We'll talk about the candidates, we'll talk about the process, we'll talk about whether you are interested in that process this year on this week's Eastern Standard. And I'll give you the email address and phone number information in just a moment after I introduce our guests for this week's program. With us in the studio today are Ronnie Ellis, reporter and columnist with CNHI, Community Newspaper Holdings Incorporated. That company owns 12 newspapers across the Commonwealth and, what, 100 and some more outside Kentucky?
In about 22 states.
Wow. And that includes the Richmond Register.
The Richmond Register is one of ours, yes.
Thank you, Ronnie, for being here with us.
Thank you for having me.
Also in the studio is Dr. Joe Gerstensen, a longtime friend of WEKU, a professor in the Eastern Kentucky University's Department of Government since 2003. And he works with the Center for Appalachian Regional Engagement and Stewardship. Joe, thanks and welcome as always.
Thanks for having me.
And on Skype this morning, a familiar face as well as voice, Bill Goodman, who has been the host of KET's Kentucky Tonight since 1996. It's also on the radio on WEKU each week. Bill is also the host of KET's Election Night coverage and One-to-One with Bill Goodman. Thank you, Bill, for making the time to be with us this morning.
John, thanks for the invitation, and hello to Ronnie and Joe.
Glad to have you guys gathered together, if not all together, at least virtually. I want to, first of all, let me tell listeners, you can get in touch with us if you have a comment, a question, personal story you want to tell for this year's primary. Write to us at wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. You can post the comment on the WEKU Facebook page, which you can do anytime, even after the program, if you're listening to the repeat on Sunday night, for instance, or send us a tweet at WEKUEST. In a little while, we will open the phone lines as well. That toll-free number, 800-621-8890. Actually, you could make the call now and go on hold, and we will get to you in just a little while. That number again, 800-621-8890. Okay. Primary 2015 is Tuesday, May 19th. Let me start. Ronnie Ellis, help me out here as we kind of run down the ballot and talk about what voters are going to find, whether they're in Madison County, Fayette County. They may find some differences in some places, but let's talk about the general statewide ballot first.
Well, statewide, of course, you're going to start with the governor's race. That's the one everyone's paying attention to. The real contest is on the Republican side, where you have four candidates running. Agriculture Commissioner James Comer, Louisville developer and former Metro Council member Hal Heiner, investment manager Matt Bevin, who ran against Mitch McConnell in last year's Republican Senate primary and lost, and former Supreme Court Justice Will T. Scott. By all indications, the first three are locked in an almost dead heat race at the top. On the Democratic side, you have an overwhelming favorite in Democratic Attorney General Jack Conway. He faces opposition, it's token opposition, from Jeff Young of Lexington, who has run previously, doesn't raise money, is not likely to pose any sort of threat at all to Conway. Probably the second most watched race will be that for Attorney General to succeed Conway. On the Democratic side, you have Steve Beshear running unopposed.
You mean Andy.
I mean Andy Beshear, the son of Steve Beshear, who's raised an enormous amount of money and, of course, carries the Beshear name, which may work in both directions depending on who is voting. On the Republican side, you have Whitney Westerfield, young former assistant Commonwealth attorney from Hopkins County. He is the judiciary chair in the Senate and played a very active and important role in the passage of the heroin bill. Mike Hogan, who is the county attorney in Lawrence County, was very active in the PSC case where Big Sandy, the big generating plant up there, converted over to gas. He opposed that for coal.
Now, Westerfield has been endorsed by Mitch McConnell, you think?
He has, which is a little unusual. McConnell usually doesn't get involved in primaries, but he did in this case. And I think Westerfield generally is the favored candidate by the larger establishment. We've kind of got a cattle call for treasurer on the Democratic side. We have two current legislators, Rick Nelson from Middlesbrough, Jim Glenn from Owensboro, a former Democratic legislator, Richard Henderson from Mount Sterling, and then a couple of fellows from Louisville, Neville Blakemore and Daniel Grossberg. On the Republican side, Allison Ball is, I believe, an attorney, but she's from Prestonsburg, a Republican activist. Kenny Imes is a current legislator. And John Larson from Lexington wants to abolish the office.
Run for the office in order to abolish it.
And that happens about every 4 years. Someone runs for that office, and you can make the case that its duties are outdated. There aren't a lot of duties. They will campaign as if they're going to balance the checkbook, but they're not in control of the budget. They simply sign checks. They don't decide what's on the checks. Secretary of State, the incumbent Allison Lundergan Grimes, is running. She's opposed by someone from Louisville named Charles Lovett. And then the Republican side, a Stephen Nipper from Independence in Northern Kentucky. Kind of interesting to me is the auditor's race, incumbent Adam Edlin. On the Democratic side, Edlin is viewed by a lot of people in his party as an up-and-coming star. He's very good on the stump. And I think probably viewed by the powers that be in the Republican side as a potential threat. And, of course, the man at the top of the Republican pyramid in this state, Mitch McConnell, has somewhat of a history of trying to take down those people early in their campaign, in their careers. And Mike Harmon is the only Republican candidate on the Republican side, so there is no primary. But Harmon is a state lawmaker. What's interesting is his campaign manager is Jesse Benton, who is by marriage the nephew-in-law, I suppose, of Rand Paul, and was the initial manager of McConnell's Senate campaign before he got involved in a controversy and left. And then the final race, Ag Commissioner Jean Marie Lawson Spann. She has her family owns a farm implement business in Southern Kentucky. She has a radio show about farm matters and agricultural matters. On the Republican side is lawmaker Richard Heath and lawmaker Ryan Quarles. Quarles has the endorsement of current Ag Commissioner and gubernatorial candidate James Comer.
Excellent. Thank you, Ronnie Ellis, for that summary of what we will find statewide. These are the issues, the candidacies that appear on everyone's ballot, no matter where you happen to live and where you're listening from for this program. Let me ask Bill Goodman and Joe Gerstensen to chime in. Anything you want to add to Ronnie's comments in laying out the slate? Let me go first to Bill Goodman since he's at the remote location at KET on the Skype.
No, John. I think Ronnie did a great job of running down the ballot, and I think that the key factor is voter turnout. As you said in your introduction, The Secretary of State, Ms. Grimes, indicated today that with approximately 3.1 million people registered to vote, that the voter turnout could be as low as 10%. In fact, she said approximately 10%. Now, that's been as high as 20. I think the average that I've heard is around 15. Today, she comes out with 10%. And if those people go to the Republican ballot, those are not a lot of votes to elect the nominee to run against Jack Conway.
Okay. And let me ask all of you, if you consider that estimate of voter turnout to be realistic, my experience being a native of Ohio and having worked in West Virginia is that secretaries of state tend sometimes to offer kind of a best case scenario or wishful thinking, positive thinking, I guess, in terms of maybe hoping that their statement of positive turnout will encourage people to vote. Do we think this is pretty realistic?
I do think it's realistic. And Secretary Grimes doesn't have a history of overestimating turnout. She's been actually slightly under the last couple of elections, although very close. But, you know, given the record of recent elections here in Kentucky, I think this is pretty realistic.
Well, Joe Gerstenson, before we take our first break during the program, why don't you have any comments regarding the slate of candidates as Ronnie has spelled them out for us?
Well, Ronnie, as Bill said, I think did a very comprehensive job of going through the slate of candidates. To the listeners, I would just point out that you won't see some of these candidates because some on next week's ballot, because some of them are unopposed. So some of these individuals, you know, take Andy Beshear. You know, if you go to vote in the Democratic primary, you're not going to see him on the ballot.
He's already on the November ballot.
Exactly. And of course, you wouldn't see him on the Republican ballot because he's not a Republican. But some of those names you'll need to keep in mind for November's election.
Now, am I correct, Ronnie? There are some other races that some folks in some parts of the Commonwealth will find.
Yeah, there are some races, depending on where you live. The special election to fill the unexpired term for Will T. Scott on the Kentucky Supreme Court. I think that's District 7, but it's Eastern Kentucky, between Janet Stumbo and Mr. Wright. I've forgotten, Sam Wright.
Now that Stumbo name is familiar.
Yeah, well, she's actually married to Niels Pillersdorf, who is an attorney there in Prestonsburg. But yeah, that's a pretty prominent name in Eastern Kentucky. She has been on the Court of Appeals previously and lost this seat in a previous election to Will T. Scott. Scott, of course, resigned in order to run for governor. Some county judge executive races and one or two Commonwealth attorney races. I assume special elections in some counties.
We're going to take our first break for this week's Eastern Standard. We are discussing the primary. It's next Tuesday, May 19th. Your questions, your comments, personal stories, observations are invited now. Write to us at WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com. Post on the Facebook page. We'll keep an eye on that and hopefully transmit those on the radio as well. Send us a tweet at WEKU EST, or go ahead and pick up the phone and call 800-621-8890. That's 800-621-8890. That email address, WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com. It's Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. The primary election, our topic on this week's program, 800-621-8890, the number you are welcome to call with a question, comment, or observation. You can also send us an email, WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com, post on Facebook, or send a tweet. Our guests for today's program are Joe Gerstenson of Department of Government. I want to call him the Political Science Department, but Department of Government at Eastern Kentucky University. We have with us Ronnie Ellis of CNHI Newspapers and Bill Goodman of KET. And gentlemen, let's talk a little bit about some stuff that's generating a little bit of heat or controversy, for lack of a better term, during the governor's race. And I know, Bill Goodman, you have spoken to all the candidates, such as your session with them Monday night, the gubernatorial, the Republican gubernatorial candidates. There have been some allegations that have been raised against Mr. Comer of abusing a former girlfriend. And then there are the allegations that perhaps Mr. Heiner was involved in setting that all up. Talk about what you heard from the candidates Monday night, Bill Goodman.
John, I think I will do that, but I also will ask everyone to weigh in on the follow-up to that, or the reaction to that, and after the allegations were first reported and what has happened since then. And I'll touch on that in just a moment. But this was their last opportunity other than tonight's, and I doubt if it'll come up tonight, although we have been surprised by some of the events. Tonight in Louisville is the Lincoln Day dinner, and they're all expected to be there. I would imagine that they will weigh their options all afternoon on whether or not to talk about this, the allegations and the controversy involving Commissioner Comer and Marilyn Thomas. The allegations were, Ronnie, you can correct me if I'm wrong about this, but they were first put out there by Sam Youngman of the Lexington Herald Leader. That was followed up by a piece from Joe Girth at the Louisville Courier-Journal, and a letter or an electronic message he received from Ms. Thomas. And I think touching on what I began with and just talking to some Republicans and some folks that follow this really closely, apparently this has not hurt James Comer at all, at least among his supporters. They've really become galvanized and are supporting him maybe even more than they did before. A lot of the Republican voters who support him don't believe the allegations. In fact, that might be across the board too. It might have, there is speculation that because of Mr. Heiner's either involvement by his running mate or his running mate's husband, that it could, in fact, not help him at all. Matt Bevin, I think, has tried to stay out of the fray, although he's been highly critical of Hal Heiner. And Mr. Scott, Justice Scott, has decided not to have any comment at all, although he said on Monday night that he did not discuss yesterday's. He was only looking at talking about tomorrow's and what is the future of Kentucky. So the other statement, and I would like to hear from Joe and Ronnie, is that although this was the story in the campaign, apparently because there hasn't been a follow-up, there has not been an interview on television with Ms. Thomas, there haven't been any other stories, that it was a big story a couple of weeks ago. There was some fallout. There were statements by Commissioner Comer and his wife, TJ. There's a spot up running now exuding his a lot of very pro-family, pro-faith. He's a good father, so forth and so on. And unless something breaks before next Tuesday, a lot of Republicans that I've talked with say that it's that story's over with. Ronnie, do you agree?
I agree that some Republicans are saying that. I don't know that I agree with their assessment. To be real honest, it is almost impossible for me to gauge with any sort of confidence how this is going to play. I have thought from the moment it came into the public domain, and if the listeners don't realize, this has been out there for a long time. People were shopping it to reporters at least since late last summer.
Who were the people shopping it to the reporters?
Well, of course, most reporters don't want to reveal their sources.
No, of course not. No, but in general, citizens or people, insiders?
They tend to be political insiders, some of whom, either distant or not so distant, had some sort of tie to the Heiner campaign. Mm-hmm. I'm not willing to say that there was a direct tie, but it was out there. And, you know, it's just the type of explosive story and rumor that it's very difficult to gauge. There's no question in my mind that the devoted core Comer supporters, if anything, have reacted with more energy. I think there's been some, I don't know how much, blowback against the Heiner camp. The reason I think that is just the recent polling seems to reflect it. Beyond that, I'm hesitant to say what effect it will have, and no one really knows the truth of the rumor.
And I think one thing that we don't have a good handle on is, yeah, we know, gee, the ardent Comer supporters, this isn't going to faze them. They're still going to come out and vote for Comer. I do agree with Ronnie that there appears to be have been some blowback against Heiner from this. But how is it going to play with those folks that still haven't decided that may come out next Tuesday? And I think that's where it's really up in the air. And with this election, apparently as close as it is, that could be the difference.
And there's a sizable undecided block in most of the polling we've seen.
Hey, Ronnie, what do you think about that 14% undecided in the latest Bluegrass poll?
Well, some of that, of course, I think probably falls into the category of, people who think a pox on all your houses. One, I think, guaranteed effect of all of this is going to be further disenchantment with the process. I don't think it's going to stop this sort of thing from happening. You know, people complain about negative advertising all the time, but the reason that campaigns continue to do it is because it works. But the 14% or the undecided block, it's difficult. And as close as they've been in the polls, you know, one of my little own cliches is that when a candidate starts talking to you about his great turnout effort and we'll win it on the ground, that's when the candidate knows he's in trouble. But in this particular case, with them running, the top three candidates running inside the margin of error and a 10 to 12% turnout, that indeed could make the difference.
But am I correct that close observers of the political scene in Kentucky, are surprised of the closeness of the race at this point, or the polls at this point?
I'm somewhat taken aback by just how close it is, particularly in light of you've got this explosive rumor out there. You've got a fella who was more or less buried by McConnell in a primary last year. It's to be assumed, given some of the comments that have been made in social media and in the press by McConnell activists, that they don't look with favor upon Matt Bevin, that he's been able to, in fact, get a lead in the latest poll. So I'm somewhat surprised, yes.
I respectfully disagree with Ronnie, and Ronnie has been covering this race far more than I have. I've seen most of the debates or heard them. Ronnie's been on the ground with them, whether it was a debate or not. He's covered them. But I think that, and this has been said before, that Matt Bevin is a much better candidate than he was in the primary last year against Senator McConnell. I even noticed on Monday night that he had not changed so much his thoughts about such things as Common Core and right to work and pension issues, but he's nuancing his language about those in a better way. We always thought all along that Hal Heiner, even though he was out front first with television, that he was going to be right up there. I think Bevin I think the total now is either 1.2 or 1.4 million of his own money. He gave an additional $500,000 to his campaign last Friday. he's been up on television, and for the most part, his ads have been, if you will, positive rather than negative, although he did have the Comer-Heiner food fight ad that most people have seen. So it's just been pretty darn close. And, of course, everybody thought that Commissioner Comer, as the early leader, was going to be in it right up to the last minute. And a lot of people have said for several weeks that it's too close to call. So I think one of the important things that we could talk about in just a minute, John, is where the votes are going to come from and how that Louisville vote is going to be divided up. If you'd like to go there.
Well, in just a moment, Bill, but let me ask, just to be clear for myself as well as for the listeners, Bevin aligns pretty much with the Tea Party philosophy. Is that how we would describe him?
Yeah, he doesn't actually identify himself as a Tea Party candidate, but a lot of his support comes from that end of the party, yes.
And certainly, if you look at his running mate, Jeanine Hampton, she is very explicitly part of the Tea Party.
She headed up the Warren County Tea Party for a while.
So I think it's a very, I think you're on pretty safe ground to say that that is, you know, the base for Bevin.
Well, as our political scientist, Joe Gerstensen, would you weigh in on the issue of the polling and the closeness of this race? Are you surprised at how close the polling is showing?
Well, I'm not all that surprised. I mean, if you look at these candidates, we have three candidates that on paper are fairly strong. You have Bevin, who by virtue of running against McConnell in the Republican primary, had established a name within the party, had gained a lot of very useful experience. As Bill said, you know, is running a much better campaign this time around than he did for that Senate primary race. You have Comer, who's won statewide office, and the only Republican to win statewide office in that election. And a very strong candidate by virtue of that has done well in raising money. And then you have Hal Heiner, who's able to fund his own campaign. And so I'm not super surprised, although perhaps going into it at the beginning, I would have thought Comer would have been out in front and others playing catch up. But at this point, you know, the polling is looking pretty consistent here in these last couple of polls.
Now, of course, there is the adage, which is the truth. There's only one poll that counts.
That is true. I guess we will find out next Tuesday.
But we have confidence, fairly strong confidence. Is this public policy polling, I guess, that we're relying on?
Well, no, I think probably what we're talking about is the Bluegrass poll.
Oh, the Bluegrass, okay.
Public policy poll that came out last week is pretty consistent with the others. We've been hearing in the press from Republican sources that internal polling, not only by the campaigns, but by various people within the party, have all been right along these lines. Over the past 3 weeks, the information I have kept getting was that one poll might have one candidate a point or two ahead and another, but they were always inside the margin of error. As Professor said, I don't think when this race began, I would have ever predicted that.
Very good. Well, let me do a little setup here, Bill. This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. Phone lines are open at 800-621-8890. WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com is our email address. You're invited to be part of this conversation. Our guests for today's program, Joe Gerstensen, Ronnie Ellis, and Bill Goodman, talking about the Tuesday's primary election. Do you plan to vote? Do you not plan to vote on Tuesday? That would be a good question, because apparently 9 out of 10 people out there in our listening area are not planning to vote. Why are you not planning to vote if that is the case? Of course, let us know why you would be planning to vote. 800-621-8890, WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com. Bill Goodman, go right ahead.
Just a quick note, John, that this has been said often on radio and by commentators and reporters on Comment on Kentucky, for example, that we're always reminded of the polling that took place last November with Grimes McConnell, and it tightened up a couple of weeks before the election day, and then Senator McConnell's victory was 16 points. So, Joe Gutherson, it's always a trick to try to read these polls. I think this was a fairly large sample. I mean, it's an average sample, but it was, I think, 2,400 likely voters. It was also pointed out, somebody said that even the incomparable Nate Silver, who's now working for ESPN, worked for the New York Times and called races correctly for years in the British Prime Minister contest, he chose the wrong the winner there.
Right.
And so even an expert like Nate Silver can mess up. So, you're right, John. It's Tuesday's the final poll and the one that counts.
Let me ask you, Bill, you raised the issue, and we've got a couple of minutes before we need to take a break, the issue of where the votes will come from. And, of course, we're focusing on this primary. So, what will the urban areas versus the rural areas, what impact will they have?
Well, let me just very quickly put in a shameless plug for our one-to-one program with Al Cross on Sunday. He comes in and before Election Day, and he's one of our KET analysts. And I ask him on the program, and then there'll be a piece up on my blog later today where he's going to be looking. And I also talked to a Republican leader in the state this morning, and let me just not name all the counties, but the Republican pretty much says that he's going to look first to Louisville and Lexington, where the votes are likely to come in fairly quickly, even though it might be tight. He's going to look at how much Heiner comes out of Louisville with a lead and how much there is any possibility that Matt Bevin may dig into that. He will also look at Northern Kentucky and the three big counties up there, Boone, Kenton, and Campbell, and how well Matt Bevin, who there are a lot of Tea Party supporters up there, as well as hardcore Republican conservatives who are more than likely in the poll shows that he's ahead there. And then Commissioner Comer really has talked about, Ronnie referenced this a few minutes ago, about his ground game and the support that he has in the rural part of the state. And this Republican operative told me that he's going to look at the old fifth, Laurel County, Whitley. He would even go over as far as Bowling Green. I'll add that Al Cross looks at Russell.
Okay, Bill, we'll come back to you on this. We're talking of the primary for Tuesday, May 19th on this week's Eastern Standard, 800-621-8890, WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com, 800-621-8890. It's Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. Primary 2015 is May 19th, next Tuesday, and we're discussing that primary with pundits, we can call them, journalists, Bill Goodman from KET and Ronnie Ellis of CNHI, the newspaper guy. And we also have a political scientist from the Department of Government at Eastern Kentucky University, Joe Gerstensen. And we'd like to hear your opinion, your questions, your observations regarding this primary. Are you planning to vote? That's the big question I think I would toss out there. Or if you're not, you can remain anonymous. You don't have to give your name and tell us that you're not voting, but feel free to call and let us know why that might be the case. 800-621-8890. That email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Bill Goodman, you were giving us the overview of what the Republican observers were looking at in terms of where they're going to see their support on Tuesday.
Yeah, just and I wrapped up and would get some feedback from Ronnie on that. I think those are the counties that Al Cross and our team on Tuesday night will be looking for. And apparently Republicans and certainly these candidates will be targeting those counties and looking for those totals also.
Let me ask this of all of you, though. The fact that we have both Lexington and Louisville have metro-style governments, the city and the surrounding county are all combined. Does that level out the response? I mean, I think it's probably a stereotype, but cities tend to be more Democrat. And the suburban and rural areas tend to go more Republican. But do the combined metro governments, are they a major factor in both of these communities?
Well, I don't know how much the form of government has, but without question, Louisville and Lexington are, for lack of a better term, more liberal than the rest of the state. But that's
because they have larger urban areas, would that
right.
not be?
Yeah. And they tend to be more diverse. The reason that the Republicans want to watch those, you know, what Bill's referring to, there's kind of been a maxim within the Republican Party in Kentucky that you only have to win about 38 counties. You really only have to campaign in a primary, at least, in about 38 counties. And Fayette and Jefferson are among them, not because they're predominantly Republicans like Republican counties like a Laurel County or a Whitley County, but rather because even if they're minority, there are so many of them just because of the population size. And so they remain very important counties even in a Republican primary.
Let me just add to that, to John, and I want to be very careful about the way I state this and let Ronnie and Joe check me on this if they disagree. But looking at what Secretary Grimes issued this morning about the 10%, there's one of the four candidates that looks at that number and is pleased that it's not higher than that. And that would be, from what I understand, Commissioner Comer. He, I believe, understands that if there is a lower number of Republican primary voters casting a ballot, that helps him Tuesday night rather than a huge turnout in Louisville or Lexington for one of the other candidates, a lower voter turnout in the rural counties where he's from and where he's worked hard and where he does have a pretty substantial volunteer organization. He thinks that's going to help him. Do you agree with that, Ronnie?
I agree that he thinks that. I don't know that I agree that he's correct. And I don't mean to say that he's incorrect. I simply do not know. I have followed him of late. I've been on the campaign trail with him. He has routinely told people, supporters, that 55,000 votes, he thinks, can win this election or win the primary election, and that his superior ground game. Now, Heiner reputedly has invested quite a bit of money in a sophisticated get-out-the-vote effort. And there are people within the Tea Party network in this state. We saw it with Rand Paul's first race against Trey Grayson, that are adept at getting out the vote. So my hesitation or making the distinction between what he believes and what the reality is that all candidates tend to say those things leading up to an election. Sometimes they're right and sometimes they're not.
What is the breakdown in terms of Democratic voters versus Republican registered voters? Do we know that?
Democrats still hold the edge, but it is a narrowing gap. I think it is now less than 1.5 to 1.
Yes,
it's about 1.4
to 1. It's about 1.4 to 1.
Does the secretary in her projection project at all at some point that the number of Democratic voters versus Republican voters? Is that taken into account?
She doesn't do that.
Not a breakout.
Breakout, as far as I know.
Do you all have any opinion about that? Does this race, because that the Conway is essentially a shoe-in for the Democratic for the governor's race?
Certainly,
the Democratic turnout would be low.
Absolutely, I would anticipate that turnout in the Republican primary will be higher than in the Democratic primary. We saw that 4 years ago in 2011, where you know there was no doubt on the Democratic side. And because we had Governor Beshear running for re-election, it'll be the same this year. The Republican turnout really, I would be absolutely floored if Democratic turnout is higher.
Let's go to the phone. We have a listener from Richmond. Ron is on the line. Ron, thank you so much for calling Eastern Standard. You are on the air with Ronnie Ellis, Joe Gerstensen, and Bill Goodman. Go right ahead.
Yes, I've been watching some of the commercials that the Republican candidates have put out, and they seem to be recycled from the last time we had a Senate race. They're all McConnell commercials redone. And I've particularly noticed for two candidates the hostility towards Obamacare. And my question is, are there any Republican candidates in this field for governor who are not as negative on Obamacare, given the fact that so many in Kentucky have benefited from it, and particularly people I know who are on Medicaid that have never had insurance before?
Great question, Ron. Thank you for your call.
Well, 2 points. It's an article of faith on the Republican side that you have to oppose Obamacare, so all the candidates do. It might be a distinction without a difference. There is a nuanced difference with Hal Heiner. He hasn't said specifically what he would do, except to say that he would not just abruptly, automatically end the expansion of Medicaid. And he cites his own experience as a cancer survivor and says he can't just throw people off of insurance. The ads that the caller referenced that are recycled, he's correct. The ads he's talking about are absolutely recycled messages from last year's campaign, but those are being run by outside independent groups, the super PACs, not by the candidates themselves.
800-621-8890, the number to call to be part of this week's Eastern Standard. Do so soon because we have just 10 minutes remaining in the show. 800-621-8890, the show live on Thursday morning, of course. If you'd like to send us an email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com or tweet at wekuest. One other issue, and I'm not sure how much of an issue this is or not. There is one little issue for the Democratic side, the gubernatorial race. Mr. Conway, as Attorney General, has filed a lawsuit against Marathon Petroleum. He claims there's no political motive to that. Your observations, gentlemen, is there potentially, would you read into that there could be a political motive? And what point would there be in doing so in this somewhat uncontested Democratic primary?
Well, if there is a political motivation, it won't show up in terms of any effects on this primary.
Is it likely that this could be an ongoing case and there will be matters in the news and going on throughout the summer into the fall?
Yeah, as long as the case isn't thrown out and he pursues it, it's going to take a while. This isn't the first time General Conway has taken on Marathon over gas prices. Sometimes politics and policy are not mutually exclusive, but it's hard to think that the timing right before you enter a general election for governor wasn't a consideration. You'd have to think it was.
Bill Goodman.
But he has numerous suits against a number of factions, for-profit colleges, and a number of other entities. So I, of course you read into that what you may, but this, I think, is the timing just happened to occur. I'd like to hear an opinion whether or not Jack Conway has been... he's been very quiet, and if he does come out of the Democratic primary Tuesday as victor with his running mate Sandy Overly, I just wonder, Ronnie, if you think that, and Joe, if you think maybe he should have taken advantage of maybe a policy statement or two, or a speech, or possibly an ad or two before this thing's even over. I mean, he knows he's going to run against a Republican. And I think also, too, that you have to give the Republican gubernatorial candidates credit for being on the stump and in debate numerous times. Ronnie, have you counted a dozen or more times they've appeared before audiences? And whether or not Mr. Conway will be that open and forthcoming to meet the Republican challenger before November. Just a couple of thoughts there.
Well, I'll address the first part of that, Bill. It is. You can certainly understand why Conway isn't kind of jumping in and saying anything about any of the Republicans at this point. However, it does seem that perhaps he's missing an opportunity to come out and talk about himself and you know, try to define himself before there is a Republican candidate that can then start, you know, telling the voters who Conway is.
Don't we generally have a shortage in that area anyway in American politics? We tend to want to throw mud at somebody else and rather than the positive picture of oneself.
Yeah, exactly. You know, why let that opponent tell the voters who you are? And so I think Conway is missing an opportunity here to get out in front of the game a little bit in that regard.
I agree. I think we saw an example last year where Allison Lundgren Grimes confronted the same choice. And she was asked about that. And the answer was they wanted to concentrate on fundraising so that they could remain competitive on the airwaves in the last few weeks. That didn't work out too well. And I think a lot of political observers have looked to Conway this time to see if he watched what happened with her. But he's made the same decision. As I said last year, we'll find out in November if it was the right decision. But I think he missed an opportunity. And it was an opportunity where he could have been out traveling the state and raising money at the same time. You know, in this era of cell phones and technology, you can raise money from the back of a bus just as well as you can from your office. And you can be out there meeting folks. Conway is not... He's not Wendell Ford or Wallace Wilkinson in terms of being a great, happy warrior on the campaign trail. It's not what he enjoys the most.
How will Conway's campaign vary based on who actually becomes his opponent?
Well, you know, the smart money says that he's hoping that Bevin is his opponent, thinking that Bevin is... a little bit too conservative even for Kentucky, or perhaps a little bit undisciplined or whatever. I would remind people who think that Conway thought the exact same thing 5 years ago when he was watching Trey Grayson and Rand Paul in a primary. I think Conway will try to make it, he'll try to make the race a state issue, local issue race. He will try to distinguish himself from national Democrats. He will say things like, yes, I voted for Obama, but I turned around and sued him. I'm the only Democratic attorney general who's fought him on EPA regulations. That's how I think he will go about it. But the Republicans will want to nationalize it. As long as the man is in office and a Republican is in a contested race with a Democrat, you're going to hear the name Obama in Kentucky.
There's no question about that. I think that Conway's just going to be happy that, you know, Kentucky has its gubernatorial, its statewide elections in these odd-numbered years. So at least he won't face some of the issues that Allison Lundgren Grimes faced last year. Because we don't have any of those congressional races, national races on the ballot. But unquestionably, regardless of who that Republican nominee is, there will still be an effort by the Republicans to bring Obama into the conversation and nationalize it.
And to what extent will Kentucky's two very visible and powerful U.S. senators come into play in this election?
I think they'll both campaign for the Republican nominee, regardless of who it is.
I think you'll see a real unified Republican Party. I think at this point, look at Jack Conway as beatable. If they're unified and can energize Republicans, they're already pretty darn fired up about these four candidates that they've looked at for the last 6 months, then I think you'll see a pretty unified effort to defeat Jack Conway.
Well, I'm not so sure this party is going to be very unified after there are some really, really hurt feelings over the Comer allegations. If Bevin were to be the nominee, we'll go through the motions. But the Bevin folks have not forgiven McConnell, and McConnell folks have not forgiven Bevin. And we've got this situation with the Comer allegations where some people are pretty hurt. This may be one of the more awkward unity rallies that the Republican Party's had in a while.
I think that might be in the public, Ronnie, but I think behind the scenes, if Senator McConnell believes, if Matt Bevin or any one of them, but let's just say because you mentioned Matt Bevin, I think you'll see a real show of support, fundraising, and an effort. He would like nothing better than to regain the Republican seat in the governor's office. And, you know, that will lend itself when legislative elections come back around and their effort to retake the House.
All right. Well, we are out of time for this week's Eastern Standard, but I guess I can summarize in saying, as Ronnie started the program, we're watching the governor's race on Tuesday night. We're going to watch the attorney general race on the Republican side. What were the other major races you said, Ronnie, that are most...
Well, you've got a crowded race for treasurer. So, I don't know.
See how that sorts out on either side, okay? All right, very good. But gentlemen, Joe Gerstensen, who is a political scientist in the government department at Eastern Kentucky University, Ronnie Ellis of CNHI Newspapers, and Bill Goodman of KET. Thank you all for all that you guys do, and thanks for sharing your wisdom and your observations on this week's Eastern Standard.
Good being with you.
Enjoyed it.
Enjoyed it very much. Thanks, John.
Eastern Standard is a production of WEKU at Eastern Kentucky University. The program repeats on Sunday evenings at 6 o'clock, and actually the podcast, the audio of the program, is going to be up on our website very soon, usually within the hour after the program on Thursday afternoon. You can download the podcast or listen to it from the website directly. We have associate producers, students who work with the program. Richard Turner, this is absolutely his final program as he graduates from Eastern Kentucky University tomorrow. Congratulations, Richard, and thanks for all the work you have done for Eastern Standard in this last year and a half or so. We also have help from Logan Riley. Noah Day and Brian Burkhart are our associate producers. Brian Bartlett is at the controls, and Julie Tennell is on the phones. I'm John Hingsberg, and thanks for being with us for Eastern Standard.